and I'll just tell you, Patrick Mbeko was is a supporter of Victoire Ingabire, and Victoire Ingabire, as you know, has been in prison in Rwanda now for 6 years, and she was arrested in 2010 when she returned to her home country to announce her wish to run for president of Rwanda and also to bring about reconciliation within that country. And she was arrested, and she remains in prison, but she has many supporters. And one of those supporters is Patrick Mbeko. Are you there, sir? Hello? Hello?
Hello?
Oh, there he is. Well, how are you, Mr. Mbeko?
Not too bad, thank you, and you?
Very good. You recently received an award from the Victoire Ingabire Umahoza. It's a prize for democracy and peace. It's established in her name because she was, as I was telling our listeners, was imprisoned 6 years ago. When did your work and interest in this case begin? And why have you taken up the cause of Victoire Ingabire?
Thank you for the question. It's because Victoire Ingabire is a great woman, and I don't know if I can, excuse me because my English is now so good.
It sounds fine to me.
Yeah, for me, Victoire Ingabire is an heroine because she fights for peace and democracy in Rwanda. And we all know that Rwanda is now, the president of Rwanda is a dictator, Mr. Paul Kagame. And to fight the dictatorship for a woman in Africa, we don't see something like that before. Mm. And this woman, she's fighting not only for Hutu because she's Hutu, but she's fighting for all Rwandans, Rwandan people, Hutu and Tutsi. And we know in Rwanda there was a genocide, and Kagame is the mastermind of the genocide. And Victoire Ingabire came to Rwanda to work for democracy and peace. And for me, it's very important. Above all, she's a woman, because mm-hmm. in Africa, you know, the place of women in the mm-hmm. political system.
Mm-hmm. I was looking at the site, by the way, and there is, I would tell people, it's the friendsofvictoire.org, and they were listing the things that she was striving for. They had a word, Ubuntu, which she took from Nelson Mandela, in which she says she doesn't believe in vengeance and that the people of Rwanda should put aside ideas of vengeance, but she does want understanding. Can you elaborate on her thoughts about that?
Yeah, because it's very important because, as I said, in Rwanda we had a genocide, a war and genocide, and there's two ethnic group, and those two ethnic group fight, you know.
Mm-hmm.
There's a Tutsi and Hutu, and everybody know today that in Rwanda there's a big problem with this ethnic problem, mm-hmm. like in most of the country in Africa.
Uh-huh.
And in Rwanda, it's very important because we had 800,000 people who died during the genocide. And today we have Kagame who tried to use this excuse to excommunicate the Hutu
mm-hmm.
In the political in the link of the country, in the political system of the country. And Victoire Ingabire came,
yes.
and she put everybody together. It's very important for Rwanda and for Africa, because what we see in Rwanda today, we saw it in other countries in Africa. And we have a woman who came, and she said, we want democracy and peace for everybody, for Hutu and Tutsi and Twa. And Mandela did it. When she came in power, when he came in power, he didn't want to pursue the people who worked during the apartheid system.
Mm-hmm.
He put everybody together for the best of the country. I think that what Victoire Ingabire is doing now. Well, now she's in prison, but mm-hmm. that's what she did.
Yes.
When she came back.
Yeah. We're speaking to Patrick Mbeko. He is the recipient of the Friends of Victoire Award, and there is that site, friendsofvictoire.org. By the way, what is your main work in on the when you on the subject of Victoire? Have you been writing about the issue or speaking out, or what has it been? What have you been doing?
I spoke about it, and I wrote a book about the situation in the region, mm-hmm. The situation on the Great Red Region.
Mm-hmm.
So the situation in Rwanda, Congo, Burundi, and Uganda, and I'm a political analyst. So mm-hmm. I used to talk about Victoire Ingabire in some interview I gave.
Yes, and they're all. It's interesting that the all those countries you're speaking of are involved with this issue, aren't they? Because my understanding is, for example, they tried to label Victoire a terrorist, and they put her on trial with four men who they had brought them from a military prison, and they said that they were associated with her, which of course defies all kind of reason, because has never been involved in any armed struggle, never advocated it, but they tried to put that label on her. But in the region, there is, of course, organizations that have been struggling both in Congo, Burundi, Uganda. And when you talk of her, we speak of her case, we are involved with all those other countries, aren't we?
Yeah, of course, yes. What people need to know is Kagame has always used ethnic problem in Rwanda to justify his politics in Rwanda and Congo and in Burundi today. So the problem here is Victoire Ingabire, she's innocent. And mm-hmm. Kagame want to use the presence of some Hutu in Congo to say Victoire Ingabire will try to prepare a coup d'etat mm-hmm. against him. But everybody knows it's not true. It's not true. The truth is, this woman works for everybody. She doesn't want to use the ethnic problem to do her politics.
Mm-hmm.
She wants to put everybody together, all the Rwandans together, and to put peace in the region. So there's a problem for Kagame, who always said he worked to stop the genocide, but is using ethnic problem to export war in Congo, for example.
Yes, can you tell? There were terrible consequences. Could you tell us a little bit about what happened when his army entered Congo?
Yeah, the Kagame and his army invaded Congo in 1996, and they say they invaded Congo to push away the people who commit genocide during the Rwanda war, but today we know Kagame and his army have invaded in Congo to take the mineral wealth of the country. And we know Kagame is supported today by United States, Israel, Canada, and other countries, Great Britain. But the war is not for the ethnic problem, but for the wealth of Congo. So they kill a lot of people, 6 million today.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, with no publicity, no consequences for him. He's still regarded by some as a liberator.
Yes, because in the United States, in the West, they say Kagame is the one who stopped the genocide
mm-hmm.
in Rwanda. So they let him do whatever he wants. He can't keep people in Congo, Burundi, or Rwanda. Nobody asks him anything.
Mm-hmm.
And he's not accountable.
Yeah. Again, this is Patrick Mbeko, and he has been awarded, along with Fred Holt and Annek Verbruggen, a recognition of their work in support of Victoire Ingabire, who has been in prison now for 6 years for challenging on a political stage the presidency of Paul Kagame. I have the impression, I would like to know your thoughts about this. You're very familiar with the region, obviously. The government of Kagame seems a little more uncomfortable than it was, say, 2 years ago. Recently, I saw and people could see it on the internet, the United Nations representative of Rwanda almost melting down in rage that anybody would criticize his government. Is this a sign of problems in Kigali?
I think the problem today is it's because his crime cannot be hidden. And everybody knows now Kagame is a killer. Mm-hmm. And now United States and all these his allies want to put pressure on him to stop his politics. But it will be difficult because everybody knows that this guy is a real killer. And even if United States want to change ally in Rwanda, they will choose someone who will be maybe more than Kagame, you know what I mean? Because
that would take
they want is a puppet.
That would take some doing.
Yeah, they want a puppet in the region, in Rwanda, in Congo, in Burundi. They don't want someone who will work for the people. So Kagame will work for them. So after 20 years, maybe they say we have to change it because his crime cannot be hidden. Everybody knows now. We have a documentary in BBC, at BBC, about Rwanda genocide. Mm-hmm. But for the first time, they tried to say to tell us the truth. Mm-hmm. As you know, in the case of Rwanda, the truth is very difficult because they know if we talk about the crime of Kagame, we will be... if you talk about the crime of Kagame, we have to talk about the crime of United States too, the politics of United States, Canada, all those countries. Mm-hmm. So they don't want people to know the truth about it.
Mm-hmm.
So they want to pull Kagame away to replace him maybe by another criminal like
mm-hmm.
him.
Mm-hmm. What about this? How well I congratulate the organization Friends of Victoire for keeping her name in front of the broad public. Do you know, is the public of Rwanda or even the people of the region, to what extent are they aware of Victoire Ingabire in the whole situation of her 6 years of imprisonment? Do you know?
Before it was difficult for people. Maybe no, there's not enough in the region in Congo, for example. Most of the people don't know who's Victoire Ingabire, and that's why I start to talk about her because we need to know what she's done mm-hmm. to fight against the dictatorship of Kagame, and we need to talk about him to put the kind of pressure on Kagame, because if people don't talk about her, Kagame can kill her.
Mm-hmm.
Kagame can kill her for sure, because this man is crazy, Kagame.
Mm-hmm.
So it's very important to keep his name alive, to talk about her every day.
Mm-hmm.
And the organization Friend of Victoire is doing a great job.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I know that they've done such things as regular demonstrations in Brussels and other European capitals, and confronting European politicians who claim to care about democracy and at such things in the Great Lakes region.
Uh-huh.
And I think you're quite right. I mean, that it is the fact that she's become at least internationally prominent that keeps her in safety. I'm sure go ahead.
I think more we talk about her, more Kagame will not be at ease, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, we have to.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe we don't need to be around them to talk about Victoire Ingabire.
Mm-hmm.
We can talk about it like you are doing now. It's very important to talk about this woman and this fight for democracy and peace in Rwanda and the region, at the Great Lake region, I think. Mm-hmm.
Well, certainly if she could be, her liberty could be won, it would be part and parcel of a broader success for all the people of that region if she were to be free. And you know what would happen if she was able to run for office as well. It would completely transform the country.
Of course, yes. And we know Kagame never won an election in Rwanda. We know that. When you look, in Rwanda we have 85% of Hutu and 14% of Tutsi. And today, Kagame are telling us he won the election with 95%. No, this is not possible. It's not possible.
One suspects that the counting went on inside his own office.
It's not possible.
I'm sure you're right. Patrick Mbeko, congratulations again for winning the prize, and congratulations to friendsofvictoire.org. I think they're doing great work.
Yeah, of course, yeah. And I don't know if my English was good. I'm so sorry.
Your English is fine. I envy you your accent.
Oh, yeah, of course. Thank you so much.
Okay, we'll talk again soon. Thank you.
Thank you so much.
Okay, bye-bye. Patrick Mbeko. And again, that prize was friendsofvictoire.org, the Victoire Ingabire Umahoza Prize for Democracy and Peace. And that award was given on the 12th of March in Brussels. The winners were Fred Holt from Norway, Annek Verbrocken, also from Holland, I'm going to guess, and Patrick Mbeko, who is, I think his home base is Montreal. And I'm going to tell you again the facts. Victoire Ingabire has been in prison for 6 years. There is a movement to nominate her for the Nobel Prize. Go to that site, friendsofvictoire.org, and learn more about her, by the way, and join the movement to get her nominated to win the Nobel Prize. If what she's advocating is peace and reasonable, she's advocating Ubuntu, a concept she has borrowed from Nelson Mandela, and it calls for understanding, not vengeance. And she is the president of the United Democratic Forces, and she returned to her homeland on 16th of January 2010. She was arrested in April 2010. She had a trial in 2011. And she was sentenced to 8 years, so she appealed. And just to show you the general demeanor of the appeal court of Rwanda, they doubled her sentence to 15 years. So this is a cause that we think is very, very important. And we will be, of course, staying with this topic. You're listening to The Taylor Report, CIUT 89.5 FM. I'll remind you now again that Gerardo Hernandez, a Cuban hero and anti-terrorist fighter, is going to be speaking and be present. And I think most of us just like to go and look at him and pat him on the back. He's going to be at the Steelworkers Hall Sunday, April the 3rd at 2:30. Gerardo Hernandez, and he was, of course, one of the Cuban Five for whom so many thousands and millions around the world made a great effort to win their freedom, and it has finally come to pass. And he's now has rejoined his family. It's very touching. I'm sure we all followed this. You all followed this very closely, and we're going to have a chance to have him in Toronto as a guest of the city. I think they ought to give him a key to the city personally. And that's going to be Gerardo Hernandez, Sunday, April 3rd, 2:30, Steelworkers Hall, a Cuban hero and anti-terrorist. And now on this subject again of heroism and of Cuba, the man who led the Cuban Revolution, who's probably the most significant name in our hemispheric history on the Latin American history, is, of course, Fidel Castro, and he has written an article, and I see it dated the 27th of March, and it's available to us today on the 28th. It was, as it even said, it was written at, turned in to the publishers of Grandma at 10:25 p.m. last night. And so the title of his article is Brother Obama. And I might have suggested, how about Oh Brother Obama? But the phrase that people are now hearing is already being passed around the world is, we don't need the empire to give us anything. Our efforts will be legal and peaceful because our commitment is to peace and fraternity among all humans, all human beings who live on this planet. Since his retirement as a leader in Cuba, Fidel has been writing on a lot of topics, and I want to remember, not only is he a political leader, but Fidel is a political theorist and a former lawyer, and he likes to take up causes and cases and to help explain them to people. He's he's a master at communication, as that's one of the, everybody agrees, keys to the victory of the Cuban Revolution was his ability to be a passionate advocate of a cause, but also to be at all times someone who was informing those who heard from him. And I'll tell you some of the things that I highlighted just reading it. I'm tempted to read a lot of it now, but you're probably asking me, please don't do all that. But he told Obama, he said, you know, you were, I think, 6 years old when we abolished racism. He said, in terms of the position of the state, I understand racism has a way of hanging on. I mean, but, and Obama could tell us a lot about that. But while he was in Cuba, there were some discussions. Somehow or another, they wanted to make Obama look like he was the vanguard of this. But Fidel said, when Obama was six, that they had eliminated all the laws and all the activity that had gone on under people like Batista, where black people were forcibly removed from public beaches and whatnot if they got in the way of those southern white people who had come down to get drunk and carouse about Havana. Fidel touches on all that. And then he said that Obama reminded, when he was in Cuba, said that he quotes, this is Fidel quoting Obama, we live in, I've come to bury the last remnant of the Cold War in the Americas. I've come here to extend the hand of friendship to the Cuban people. And then Fidel comments, followed by a deluge of concepts entirely novel for the majority of us. We both live in a new world colonized by Europeans, the U.S. president continued. Cuba, like the United States, was built in part by slaves brought here from Africa. Like the United States, Cuban people could trace their heritage to both slaves and slave owners. Fidel says the native populations don't exist at all in Obama's mind. Nor does he say that the revolution swept away racial discrimination of the pension or that the pensions and salaries for all Cubans were decreed by it before Mr. Obama was 10 years old. The hateful, racist, bourgeois custom of hiring strong men to expel black citizens from recreational centers was swept away by the Cuban Revolution. That which would go down in history for the battle against apartheid that liberated Angola. A very important point that Fidel has raised, that he's reminding everyone that the Cubans sent soldiers and they confronted not just reactionary elements of Angola, but the actual armed forces of apartheid South Africa, which entered Angola to destroy the government of Angola. And the Cubans were there. And resisted. And then he raises a novel point, and I may call attention on this show because I just think probably not very many people are going to. He says, we need to look into the fact and what became of these, of the nuclear weapons possessed by South Africa. And I can tell you, if you look into, there's a biography of, an as-told-to biography, which you can find. I'll I don't have the author's name, but I'll find it for you, of Fidel, where he says he told the story of meeting Nelson Mandela after Nelson was freed and became president of South Africa. The two met, and he said, "I asked Nelson, your country had nuclear weapons. What's become of those weapons?" And Mandela said, "They never tell me about these things." But Fidel, in his go to grandma and read it, he devotes a couple of paragraphs to it, and he also refers you to some authors where you can get their books or their essays. And he says, as far as he's concerned, that's an important matter. And he said, you want to remember that Ronald Reagan and Israel and helped South Africa acquire those weapons. And he points out, world needs to be reminded, the United States is not only a possessor of nuclear weapons. The United States is the only country to ever use them. And they dropped two on Japan. He raises this point in relation to the visit of Obama. I'll say Geraldo Hernandez is coming Sunday, April the 3rd, 2:30 at Steelworkers Hall. He is one of the Cuban Five. Lastly here, I want to mention again that Palmyra, a World Heritage Site, has been liberated by the Syrian army, and I think it was a major blow to the efforts by Western powers to first destabilize and to create chaos in Syria. And they've always winked at they claim to be fighting ISIS. We have a horrible situation like Brussels, where ISIS made the claim that they had carried out the attack in Brussels. Well, then why isn't the Prime Minister of Belgium, and why isn't the President of France and the President of the United States and the Prime Minister of Britain congratulating the Syrian army for crushing the ISIS forces that had been occupying the World Heritage Site? And here's a New York Times headline, and this is today, Monday, the 28th of March. It says, "Syrian troops said to capture historic Palmyra from ISIS." Well, I got news for you, the New York Times. I've known that they captured Palmyra for 3 days now, but you are still using the curious phrase, "Syrian troops said to recapture." No, they recaptured it. And I know it breaks your heart to hear this, but, you know, America's been playing a double game. They, when those ISIS forces crossed the desert to attack Palmyra at a time when there was no Russian Air Force in the sky to stop them. The Americans were already in the sky, but they didn't do anything to stop them because they were playing a double game. And if we want to put an end to terrorism, we've got to put an end to the double game. And the Prime Minister of Canada, who must appreciate a World Heritage Site like the rest of us, because that's a mark of civilization. Do you recognize that this is an important historic site that's a responsibility of all of us to protect? If you recognize it, that would put you on the civilized side of the ledger. Then congratulate Syria for having recaptured that site, because Syria had already been protecting it. It had been secure. And, of course, it had been there for thousands of years, and the Republic of Syria was protecting that site. But these barbarians showed up. And the Americans and the British all whistled and looked at the sky. They didn't care. So it's been liberated, and we know who the civilized ones are. Now, Trudeau and Obama better step up and act like grown-up civilized people and congratulate the Syrians. This is the Taylor Report, CIUT 89.5 FM, and we'll see you next week.